one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hi there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Happy 4th of July, happy Independence Day, and happy 250th birthday to USA, USA. I'm recording this early in the morning on the 4th of July, and we got a solo podcast coming at you here. Just wanted to get you set up for the weekend talk a little bit about the past week, but as we get set for the last three series before the All-Star break, I'm going to go through a starting lineup full of Phillies topics. I've got nine topics to go through here on this edition of the podcast, but we're going to do it real quick. We're going to do it bullet point style so that you're not spending the entire day listening to me do a Phillies podcast. I know you've got barbecues and picnics and family to visit. I understand all those different things. But if you're driving around this weekend and you just feel like you need a little bit of Phillies content for your earballs, well, then you can come right here to the Hittin' Season podcast. And so we're going to talk about the All-Star game coming up. We're going to talk about what to do about Aaron Nola, the bullpen, some trade deadline chatter, what's going on with the Braves, Zach Wheeler and Don Mattingly, Paul Skeens, Andrew Painter, like lots of good stuff here as we get rolling on this 4th of July edition of Hittin' Season. And I know we didn't have a roundtable podcast this week. I apologize for that. It's been an unusual week with the schedules for Justin and Liz and I and some other issues going on. So we were not able to get a midweek roundtable done. But I am here with you at the end of the week, and we will hop back on the roundtable at the start of next week. So have no fear. The three of us will be back together again soon. All right, let's dive into the top nine, a starting lineup of storylines for your Philadelphia Phillies here on the 4th of July as the Phils get set for a three-game series in Kansas City against the Royals. No game on Friday. This happened a couple of weeks ago in Philadelphia, though, when the Phillies were hosting the Mets and they played on a Thursday and then had Friday off. There was a World Cup game taking place in Kansas City on Friday night, and you just cannot have the Phillies playing in the same area as World Cup. It's too many crazy fans getting together at one time. So they are starting this three-game series on Saturday. And I know a lot of you are wondering why there isn't a 4th of July baseball game being played in Philadelphia. I mean, it would seem on the 250th anniversary of our country. Why, you know, how is it that they're not playing baseball in Philadelphia? Well, there's a few different reasons. And you know, there is World Cup action happening, but it doesn't have as much to do with the World Cup as it does getting ready for the All-Star game coming up in a couple of weeks. The Phillies wanted to make sure that they were on the road in these last week and a half before All-Star festivities in order to get Citizens Bank Park ready. And so so that's why you do not have the Phillies playing at home this weekend in a series against somebody or other. All right. So leading off with our top storylines for the Phillies here on this 4th of July. All right, leading off on our top nine storylines for the Phillies here on the 4th of July, the offense is suddenly red hot. This was the big bugaboo early in the season. Of course, remember, that's one of the main reasons why this team started off 9-19. The bats just couldn't get anything going outside of Kyle Schwarber, Brandon Marsh, or Bryce Harper. Now, those three are still red hot. They've been hot all season, and they have not cooled off. In fact, a couple of these guys, Harper and Marsh in particular, have gotten even hotter as the month of June rolled along. Kyle Schwarber too. As a team in the month, from June 1st until now, so this is encompassing more than just the month of June, but since June 1st, here on the 4th of July, prior to the start of the Philly series in Kansas City, the Phillies are tied with the Dodgers for the fourth most runs scored in Major League Baseball over that stretch. Only the Cubs, Brewers, and, hold on to your hats, kids, the Rockies lead Major League Baseball in runs scored over that time since June 1st. So how do you like that? In terms of OPS, the Phillies are pretty productive, not quite as high up the leaderboard, but ninth overall in OPS at 773. They are ninth in batting average. Team's hitting 263 overall. We've seen an improvement in their on-base percentage. It's at 325. That's 11th best in baseball since June 1st. But the slugging has also come around. 448 in slugging. That is ninth best in Major League Baseball. They're starting to hit more homers, guys, and that's been the big difference. 45 home runs are tied for fifth most in baseball. Only the Twins, Rockies, Yankees, A's, and Tigers have hit more home runs since June 1st. We're seeing a little bit more plate discipline from the Phillies. They're not walking a whole lot more, though. 7.7% walk rate is still just 22nd in baseball. And they're striking out a bit. They've struck out the second most in Major League Baseball here over that time. But the isolated power, the power numbers, the home runs per fly ball, that's all doing better. They're starting to slug the ball more, and they're doing more damage on pitches over the strike zone. That's one of the big reasons why Bryce Harper is having such a resurgence here in 2026. He's making sure that when pitchers come over the plate, he's hurting them. He's doing damage on those pitches. So that is certainly something good to see from Bryce Harper and from really the rest of the team. They're all improving in that area. And so while the Phillies are, I think the big number for this team is hitting with runners in scoring position. That's been a big improvement for the Phillies here, and one of the main reasons why they've been able to score so many runs. Since June 1st, the Phillies lead all of Major League Baseball in batting average with runners in scoring position at .327. They have hit 11 home runs with runners in scoring position. That's tied for eighth most. But they have been just doing so much more damage and been way more productive with runners in scoring position. A 966 OPS with runners in scoring position since June 1st. And that's made all the difference in the world. They are doing their damage. They have the highest weighted runs created of any team in Major League Baseball with runners in scoring position since June 1st. And it's you don't have to hit the ball all the time if you're doing it when it matters most. And so we're seeing the Phillies' improvement across the board with runners in scoring position in the month of June. The second highest line drive rate with runners in scoring position. The third highest home runs per fly ball rate with runners in scoring position. This team is zeroing in situations that really matter since June 1st. And so that's been the big key to the Phillies' offensive resurgence here in the month of June and the first part of July, and why they've been able to put up so many crooked numbers on the scoreboard. Their offense is performing with runners in scoring position in ways that they normally don't. Now, is that sustainable? That's going to be the key for the Phillies, not only here for the rest of the regular season, but of course, when the team gets to October and hitting with runners in scoring position, getting on base is the team's big bugaboo. But for now, the offense really up and down the lineup, they're getting contributions from pretty much everyone, but they're still driven by the stars, as well as Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott, who are also contributing, and even JT Realmuto has gotten into the mix a little bit here since the calendar flipped to June. All right, batting second here in our top storylines, the Phillies have a severe Aaron Nola problem. And I don't think it can go on a whole lot longer. We've talked about this on recent podcasts. It did not get any better after his start against the Pirates at the beginning of the series last week. Aaron Nola does not seem to be able to pitch more than three or four innings without blowing up. What his pattern had been in his previous two or three starts was he'd give up a couple of home runs early in the game and put the Phillies in a 3-0 hole by giving up a bomb in the first and a bomb in the second. And then in his last two or three innings of work, he'd kind of scuffle but get through it unscathed. That did not happen against the Pirates in the series opener last Monday when he was given a 5-0 lead and got absolutely torched. And this is, he was great for the first three innings, untouchable for the first three innings, generated, I think, 23 swings and misses in the first three innings. And then the stuff disappeared. And so this is a guy who has thrown a ton of innings over his career. The most innings in Major League Baseball over a six-year stretch, I think it is, from like 2017 to 2023 or 2024, something like that. By far the most innings pitched in baseball. We might be seeing that the bill has come due on Aaron Nola. So the question is, what do you do with him? I agree with the folks that say you're not going to designate him for assignment. He's owed way too much money over the next 4 years after this season. I think it's $98 million is what it is. Over the next 4 years. So, I mean, you're not going to just eat all that money. You can eat a little bit of Taiwan Walker money, and you can eat $22 million of Nick Castellanos money, but you can't eat $98 million. So they're going to probably have him on a short leash. They're probably going to try and find him a buddy, find him a pitching buddy at the start of games. You know, remember when you were little kids and you needed to have a buddy in fire drills? That's what they're going to do for Aaron Nola. They're going to need to find him a starting buddy who can piggyback him so that he doesn't have to pitch any more than two or three innings. Is it an incredible waste of payroll for Aaron Nola to have this role on the team? It 100% is. Is there anything the Phillies can do about it? There probably is not. Now, they might go and add a starting pitcher at the trade deadline, and I think that's, unfortunately, we're going to get to that in just a second. This Aaron Nola situation has probably changed the calculus for Dave Dombrowski. But as of right now, they probably have no choice but to find a way to have him piggybacked with someone else. I mean, it's probably, if they get another pitcher, they would probably piggyback Aaron Nola and Alan Ronhell so that you don't ask these relievers to have to give you 4 and 5 innings every single time, both Nola and the number 5 starter pitch. But Aaron Nola has no answers. He has no solutions for this issue, for what's going wrong with him. He's really getting hurt from the stretch. As Jason Stark mentioned, I think it was on 97.5 The Fanatic this week. It's been a big, big problem for him pitching from the stretch. And he's had real issues since the pitch clock came into being. I think the pitch clock has hurt him tremendously. He is a guy who took a long time between pitches to gather himself, maybe to gather energy. And I think the fact that he has to move at a faster pace now with the pitch clock, I think that has negatively affected him. I know there's a lot of speculation, too, that the ABS system is negatively affecting him, that he's not getting calls just off the corner anymore that he used to. But I also don't notice a lot of hitters who are challenging Aaron Nola pitches on the edges of the strike zone. He's missing and missing significantly when he gets tired and then has to come over the plate. And if he has to come over the plate at all, he's getting destroyed. So the only way Aaron Nola can get guys out is to get them fishing out of the strike zone. And that only works for so long because eventually you do have to come in over the plate to get guys out. Your stuff has to be good enough to get guys out over the plate. It's got to be deceptive enough, or it's got to be hard enough to get some swings when balls go over the plate that don't end up over the fence. And Aaron Nola is not keeping the ball down. His ground ball rate is not very good. He can't get those ground balls when he wants to. And so they have an Aaron Nola problem. And it's a big deal, which takes us to our number 3 issue. The Phillies also have a bullpen problem. The Phillies bullpen is a major concern right now. The Phillies' day off on Friday certainly helps the bullpen, and they've been overtaxed because of Aaron Nola not being able to pitch deeply into games, and because they have not had a number 5 starter, whether it be Taijuan Walker or Andrew Painter or now Alan Ronhell, who was sent down to AAA just because the Phillies aren't going to need a number 5 starter for a little while. The Phillies wanted to get an extra bullpen arm on the roster, and so they recalled lefty Tanner Banks ahead of the series in Kansas City. If you're wondering when Brad Keller will be up, it might be a few more days because he had his first rehab assignment in Lehigh Valley on Friday night, and it did not go well. Gave up 2 runs on 2 hits, including a home run in 1 inning of work. So he still has a little ways to go, it seems. The bullpen entered Thursday just 19th in innings pitched with 312. That is because mostly the work of the top 2 starters in the bullpen. But as Todd Zielecki notes, since June 12th, they have been very much taxed. 82 innings in their last 20 games since June 12th. That is the 4th highest rate in baseball. And we saw it against Pittsburgh. Right, Pittsburgh had a 3-1 lead in the 7th inning. Tim Mazza allowed the game-tying run in the 5th, and then Jose Alvarado, who has a 6.10 ERA on the season now, gave up 2 runs in the 7th to give the Pirates a 3-1 lead. Lou Trevino, they have to use some of these guys. They have to use some of these guys because you can't use the big guns every single game. Trevino allowed 2 runs in the 8th inning to make it 5-1. His ERA is over 14. And Kyle Backes, who was the spring training star, and how often have we said, don't trust the spring training stars, has a 5.93 ERA after allowing a home run in the 9th inning. Like, you've got Joan Duran, who was named the National League Reliever of the Month for the month of June. He had a tremendous June. He can't pitch every day. You don't want him pitching every day. Orion Kerkering has largely been very good. A couple of appearances here and there where he has lost his location, but managed to wriggle out of it. But you still don't really fully trust Orion Kerkering. You don't really fully trust Jonathan Bolin, even though he has pitched pretty well this year. And Tim Mazza has pitched pretty well this year. But you had Chase Shugart, who was recently sent down to AAA. They were pitching him way too much, but they really didn't have a choice. Brad Keller was bad. An ERA over 4 before he got hurt and is now again doing the AAA rehab. Like, they really need guys like Jose Alvarado and Tanner Banks to step up here. And they need Brad Keller to step up when he gets back. But there's a real concern there's a real concern about this bullpen that it was seen as a strength, but they might need to spend resources on that at the trade deadline. Well, which brings us to the cleanup hitter in our top Phillies storylines here on the 4th of July. What do the Phillies do at the trade deadline? Is adding a bat still the most important deadline acquisition? Right now, over the last month and a few days, the offense has been the strength of the team. So we have seen with this baseball team, its strengths and weaknesses are like Jell-O. You can mold it into any different kind of thing you want. And right now, the back end of the starting rotation, and sometimes Jesus Luzardo, are some of the weaknesses, and a good portion, three quarters of the bullpen, is unreliable and untrustworthy right now, after being good for most of the season. Now they have hit a rough patch, while the offense has been carrying the team during this latest hot stretch. But you could make the argument that is what good teams do. If you have a good rotation, you have a good bullpen, and you have a good lineup, at different points during the season, different aspects of those parts of the teams are going to be performing well and are going to struggle. And so what you would hope is that when one aspect of the team struggles a little bit, the other aspect of the team picks up the slack. I do think we are seeing that with this Phillies team over the course of the season that's been happening. So it may not be a bad thing that the offense is performing the way it is, but it also, maybe it shouldn't change what the priorities are. And as fans, we're always reacting to the latest data set that we have. I know we do that here on the podcast. We can only react to what we're seeing happen right in front of us. And at the moment, the offense is carrying the team and the pitching staff is having issues. Should that impact what Dave Dombrowski does at the trade deadline? I still really think this team needs another bat. I had been saying I still think that is the most important thing this team needs. But given Aaron Nola, I think Aaron Nola is the big issue here. Given what we've seen from him and his inability to pitch past the fourth or fifth inning pretty much every time out, I think if Dave Dombrowski has to prioritize any one thing right now, it has to be getting a starting pitcher. I've changed my mind on that. And I think then it's a hitter and then it's the bullpen, because I do think the Phillies have enough arms that they should be able to figure out a bullpen mix that works. That's going to be the key with Brad Keller and Alvarado and Tanner Banks. You're paying these guys a significant amount of money to perform, and largely they have not for most of the season. But as we've seen also with bullpens, especially, they can be especially schizophrenic, and they might hit their stride this summer. So I do think they need to add another left-handed reliever to the mix. I don't think it's going to be someone like Aroldis Chapman. I think if you are going to spend, because also the Phillies don't have a lot of great prospects. But that takes us to number five, the number five hitter in our top storylines. What are you willing to trade to get a better starting pitcher, a better relief pitcher, or a better bat? I was listening to the Phillies Show podcast, and Ruben Amaro was talking about trading Andrew Painter for Ranger Suarez, who just signed, obviously, that long deal with the Red Sox. The Phillies chose not to sign him because of payroll concerns, obviously. I don't think anything has changed between now and then, other than the fact that Aaron Nola isn't performing, but I don't think the Phillies can afford Ranger Suarez, and I certainly am much more open to trading Andrew Painter now. He's not the same pitcher that he was before Tommy John. He might get back to being that pitcher. I'm skeptical. I frankly doubt it. I doubt that he can be that pitcher. I doubt that he can be the guy that he used to be, simply because we have seen with too many Phillies pitching prospects an inability for them to put it together, right? Sixto Sanchez didn't fall apart while he was with the Phillies. The Phillies actually got him out the door before everything fell apart for him in Miami. Spencer Howard, who was supposed to be a mega pitching prospect, could never figure it out at the big league level and dealt with injuries. And he's pretty much out of baseball at this point, or still trying to find a way onto a major league roster. I don't want to lump Andrew Painter into that category. I really don't. But he is not impressive right now. There's nothing about him that's impressive. There truly isn't. So yes, I'd be willing to move Andrew Painter in a deal. But I think also you're trading Andrew Painter at a low point now. I don't think you'd get as much for him. Would I trade Andrew Painter straight up for Ranger Suarez? Yeah, I might if the money worked out, but I don't think it's a realistic trade proposal. But given the fact you've got the collective bargaining agreement situation coming up over the course of this winter, you don't know what the 2027 season is going to look like. These are generational seasons we're seeing from Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Brandon Marsh, Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler, Joan Duran. You have to take advantage of it. You have to take advantage of these six superstars doing what they're doing right now. And if that means Andrew Painter goes away in a trade, then Andrew Painter has to go away in a trade. That means Gage Wood has to go away in a trade. I don't care. I truly don't care. I am down on prospects. I don't care if they keep any of them. I don't care who they keep. I don't care who gets sent. If you can improve the big league roster, because this team's not built, this team over the next 5 to 7 years, it's not going to build itself through the farm system. Look at the farm system. It's garbage. There's nothing coming up that's good that you're going to be able to say, here's the next group. Aiden Miller still is not doing anything with baseball. I have no trust in the farm system or this team's ability to draft and develop players. So if you have anything in the farm system that would act as good trade compensation, do it. Do it if it's going to improve the big league roster. And so that means Andrew Painter. That means Gage Wood. That means maybe I hold on to Francisco Renteria, the young kid that they just paid a slew of money to, the 17-year-old they just drafted in the international market. Or not drafted, but they just signed it from the international market. He looks like a stud. Hold on to him. But other than that, everything is on the block, as far as I'm concerned. All right, our number six hitter. Can the Phillies actually catch the Atlanta Braves? The Atlanta Braves won on Friday night, so the lead in the National League East for Atlanta is now 3 games, but the Atlanta Braves have been on quite the spiral over the course of the last 3 weeks or so, to the point the Phillies have made up, I think, 9 games since the start of June against the Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta was running away with this division. And now all of a sudden, the Phillies are just 3 games back. It was 2.5 before Friday night. Now again, the Phillies did win the Braves did win on Tuesday night, on Friday night against the Mets. Get your days right, John. Slow down. Get your days right. The Phillies were 10.5 games back of the Atlanta Braves back on April 26th. And now 3 games behind Atlanta. And this is a race again. And don't look now, but the Marlins are in there too. And the Nationals keep scoring runs. If they can get a pitching staff together, look out for the Nationals and Marlins right now. It's a fun National League East. The Atlanta Braves have opened the door. They're having a month like the Phillies had in April. And so it looked like it was over. Anytime you fall down by that many, and I just think I have to stop assuming that the season is over with a bad April. I don't know how many times I need to see it, that a team goes down big in the first month, month and a half of the season, and then they come back. It didn't used to be that way, I think, is the issue. Like, when I was growing up, that didn't used to happen. But it does seem to be happening more and more lately. So will the Phillies be in first place at the All-Star break? I thought it might happen, but I'm now a little skeptical that it will. But as you're looking at the schedules here over the course of the next week and a half heading into the All-Star break, we know the Phillies are going to be in Kansas City against maybe the worst team in the American League, the Kansas City Royals, for a 3-game series. And then the Phillies go to Cincinnati to take on a Reds team that's around 500. So that'll be a tougher series for them. And then you're finishing off in Detroit against the Tigers, who are playing better but are still among the worst teams in the National League. Meanwhile, the Braves finish up their first half of the season hosting the Mets in a 4-game series. Then the Braves travel to Pittsburgh to take on a Pirates team that can score runs. We just saw that. The Pirates are a decent little team. And I don't know that the Braves are a whole lot better than Pittsburgh. They probably are a little bit better. But they're in Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates. And then they finish up with 3 more games in St. Louis against the Cardinals, a team they just lost a series to in Atlanta. So I think the Phillies have an easier time of it going into the All-Star break. I don't think that they'll make up the 3 games on Atlanta during the course of their next 9 games. But the way the two teams have been playing, the trajectory is that the Phillies would absolutely do that. Anyway, that would be fun if by the All-Star break, the Phillies have somehow catapulted themselves into first place. All right, number 7. How mad is Zach Wheeler? at Don Mattingly. Should Zach Wheeler have been allowed to try to get one additional hitter out and get the win on Wednesday against the Pittsburgh Pirates? Remember the vaunted Zach Wheeler versus Paul Skeens start? I mean, the Phillies have just had his number over the years, and Skeens, and this kind of doubles up on the next point, which is number eight. The Phillies have Paul Skeens' number. This was supposed to be a pitching matchup for the ages, Zach Wheeler against Paul Skeens, but Skeens has been struggling tremendously since the Phillies beat him up in Pittsburgh. And he's just not himself. He's not throwing as hard. I mean, you had to think that it was what Skeens, how hard he was throwing and what he was doing, that it was unsustainable long term. And it certainly looks that way, you know? The arm is not meant to do that over and over and over again, what Skeens was doing. And so he's really been struggling. I'm not sure exactly what the issue is with him, but against the Phillies, they hit him around again. They are not afraid of Paul Skeens. And I think a lot of it when you're facing a guy like that is mental, you know, to know that you can hit the guy. And so you're not intimidated by what he's thrown up there. But I will also say Skeens' velocity has dropped. He's not throwing nearly as many 98 plus mile an hour fastballs in his starts. I think he's only thrown like three or four in his last eight or nine starts. And his rate of throwing hard is much higher than that. So there's something going on there with Skeens. But as for Zach Wheeler, he got mad at Don Mattingly because Wheeler was over 100 pitches as he was struggling to get through the fifth. He got the first two outs in the fifth inning, got his 10th strikeout of the game, but then he gave up a single, a bloop single, a hard hit single, and then another bloop single. And so Don Mattingly came out and took him out of the game, meaning he was not in line to get another win should the Phillies go on to win the game. And the Phillies had a big lead, and it was starting that the Pirates were chipping away. And Wheeler was just not able to get that last out. And after the game, he admitted that he was angry at Don Mattingly for taking him out of the game. But Mattingly, after the game, Mattingly did the right thing, by the way. And no Phillies fan should think that he didn't. And I don't have a problem with Zach Wheeler getting mad as long as he wasn't disrespectful to Mattingly, because Zach Wheeler is an intense guy and he wants to win the Cy Young Award. And he wanted a chance to get a win for himself on his ledger. But he also is a team player, and so he's not going to throw a fit. He's not going to make a big deal about it. And Don Mattingly said, you know, I understand why he was upset. I don't mind that he's angry. He's a veteran pitcher, and he, generally speaking, gets the benefit of the doubt, but he's also recovering from thoracic outlet syndrome. He's still a guy that you have to be somewhat careful with, and it was over 100 degrees on the field. It was an unbelievably hot night. You want this guy available in August and September, and most importantly, in October to win the World Series. So yeah, we're not going to push him when we're up by six runs in a late, early July game against the Pittsburgh Pirates in Philadelphia on a night when it's over 100 degrees. I'm going to go get the guy. They tried to let him get the last out, and he couldn't get the last out. Now, a couple of the hits were bloopers. Wheeler didn't pitch badly. He probably, in most other circumstances, would have gotten that last out, but it didn't happen. So no, I don't have a problem with Zach Wheeler being mad at Don Mattingly. I don't think it's something that anybody needs to be worried about or thinking about. Do I think Zach Wheeler should have been mad at Don Mattingly? I do not. But it was also probably a little bit embarrassing for Zach Wheeler to get pulled out in that situation, because it was the first time, I think, since mid-2024 that Zach Wheeler did not complete at least five innings in a game. And that's a big deal. I mean, he prides himself on pitching deeply into games, but it was a struggle for him on Wednesday night. It was a struggle for him to get through that game. And you're not going to let him go to 110, 115 pitches just so he can get a win in his ledger in a game that you were already well ahead on. And you want to save the bullpen, but knowing that they had an off day on Friday, Don Mattingly decided to go and get one of his ace starting pitchers, and it was the right decision. All right, last thing here. Number nine, let's give you a little All-Star Game update. I'm recording here early on Saturday morning, July 4th. We will know later today whether Brandon Marsh, Bryson Stott, Alec Bohm, and even Christopher Sanchez will be starting in the All-Star Game. Now, we already have a pretty good idea that Stott and Bohm won't be able to overcome their early deficits in this second round of fan voting. And that also means they won't be at the All-Star game if they don't. So this has been fun for Stott and Bohm to make it to this round, but they are not going to start in the All-Star game, and they won't be at the All-Star game. But Marsh was leading all outfielders in votes at last check. It appears he's a good bet to start in the All-Star game. Congratulations, Phillies fans. You have heeded the call. but you haven't stuffed the ballot box for Brandon Marsh. He has proven in June and early July even more that he is deserving of going to the All-Star game with this incredible home run barrage that he has been on. He's going to hit 20 to 25 home runs this year. And OPS is getting close to 900 again for Marsh. He is a legitimate All-Star, and he is going to start the All-Star game. It also appears, if you had hopes of Christopher Sanchez starting the All-Star game, and I'm sure you did, Jacob Mizorowski, the guy who would have likely started the All-Star game over Christopher Sanchez, all metrics indicate Mizorowski is having a better season than Sanchez, although not by a lot. He apparently will pitch in a game just before the All-Star break, which means he will likely not be available to start in the game. And that almost certainly leaves the door open for Christopher Sanchez as the hands-down favorite. And we should hear that announcement later today. I predict, it seems unlikely, but I predict we'll see six Phillies on the All-Star roster. When we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, we all talked about six deserving Phillies and that probably only four would get on. But you're not, Brandon Marsh is going to get voted in. There's no way Kyle Schwarber is left off the team. Christopher Sanchez is going to make the team. How do you leave off Joan Duran, who is one of the two best relief pitchers in baseball? He's got to be there. So then it's Zach Wheeler and Bryce Harper. Now, could Zach Wheeler miss in a numbers pinch? I guess, but he's got an ERA of two. He's got an ERA of two, and he is one of the marquee starting pitchers in baseball. And if Jacob Mizorowski can't pitch in the game, they're going to need to find a replacement. So I think Zach Wheeler will go in as a starter. And also Shohei Ohtani likely isn't going to pitch, so they will need another pitcher. Zach Wheeler's got to be like the first guy they call if he was on the bubble, right? And then there's Bryce Harper, who leads all National League first basemen in OPS, and it is in his home stadium. Now, he should have been voted in. He should be the starter, but he won't be. How do you leave Bryce Harper off the roster when the All-Star game's in Philadelphia? You don't. Simply put, you don't. So I just have a hard time believing Bryce Harper will not be on the All-Star team. So there's Harper, Marsh, Schwarber, Sanchez, Wheeler, and Duran. I don't see any way you can leave those six guys off the National League All-Star roster playing in Philadelphia. They are all deserving. And it's in Philadelphia. Like, if you're going to make a call, as long as every team is represented, like, a Phillies player is probably going to get that first phone call. And so that's, I think that's where we'll find out coming up here later on Saturday what the All-Star starting roster is going to look like. And we should know whether or not Christopher Sanchez is going to start in the All-Star game for the Phillies. All right, the upcoming schedule, I mentioned it a minute ago. The Phillies begin a series with the Royals in Kansas City here on the 4th of July. 1980 World Series rematch. Royals be looking for revenge, of course. They then travel to Cincinnati for a series with the Reds, followed by a series in Detroit against the Tigers to wrap up the unofficial first half of the season. The All-Star break doesn't come right at the midway point, as all of you know, but that we do refer to it as the first half and the second half of the season. So that is how things look. The Phillies have a favorable schedule, a lot of road games. Remember, the Phillies had a three-city road trip before coming home for four games against the Pirates, and now there's another three-city road trip, but the Phillies did get a much-needed day off on Friday. They hadn't had a day off in a while, and so they will now hopefully be refreshed. And maybe they'll get a little bit of cooperation from the weather here over the last week and a half and play in some temperatures that aren't quite as surface of Venus-like. The real field temperature, the temperature might be 102 degrees. The real field temperature is surface of Venus right now for most of us. And that really shouldn't be the case. So hopefully the Phillies and the rest of these teams will start to see some better weather here heading into the All-Star break. And maybe at the All-Star game, the weather will not be like this. No heat domes for the All-Star game, please. I beg of you. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, the roundtable edition of the podcast will appear at the beginning of next week as we recap the Kansas City series. And we have some good little plans for the All-Star game, too, coming up week after next. So we're excited for that as All-Star festivities come to Philadelphia. Friends, if you know people who love the Phillies and love podcasts but don't know about us, that's weird. Tell them about us. Hittin' Season on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're also on the WHYY YouTube channel. You can find all of our roundtable editions of the podcast there as well. And would encourage you to leave a 5-star rating and a review at Apple Podcasts if you listen to us over there. Again, we would love to have any new listeners come on board here during the second half of the Phillies season. The weather's hot, so stay in your car and listen to some fun Phillies chatter. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.